Insight with Bruce Dumont.
He Slew the Dreamer, the true story of James Earl Ray, is the story of the murder of Martin Luther King. The author of that book, William Bradford Huey, is our guest today. And Mr. Huey, it's nice to have you with us. I'd like to begin by finding out how you became involved with James Earl Ray.
First, I lived down in Alabama. I had known Dr. King since 1955 when he first got publicity. And he was a friend of mine. And when he was killed, I decided that I would try to establish the truth. From a long experience as a police reporter and going into jails from down to Charles Manson, I knew that it was probably just a one-man job, but I wanted to find the truth. So I made a deal with Ray through his attorney, Arthur Haynes, that I would pay for his defense and I would advance his lawyers up to $40,000 if Ray would help me establish the truth. I knew that in the courtroom, the truth would not be established because the defense would not present any case, and there wouldn't be any, and all the court, the trial would simply be endless presentation of the state's case, which had already been published.
So you were going to, you made a deal to buy his story?
I made a deal exactly for Ray, and he understood it. It all spelled out very clearly that I wouldn't publish the story of the murder until after the verdict in his trial, but that he would tell me all about his experiences during the year. Of course, he spent a month here in Chicago working for a restaurant, the Indian Trail restaurant here.
Which, on the North Shore.
That's right, which he told me about, which the FBI didn't know anything about, incidentally. And so he told me all of the, and he told me the truth about his travels here in Canada and then going to Mexico and into California and having plastic surgery, all of those things I found.
How do you know he was telling you the truth?
Because I went there and verified it. And he had a remarkable memory. He could tell me exactly where a motel, he could tell me, I went to a beautiful resort in Canada called Grey Rocks. And I went up there and I found his registration. I went to Mexico and I found his registration there. So he told me the truth about that, because not because I believed the truth, but I went there and understand and found it to be true.
Did he ever mention to you anything about being involved in a conspiracy, which he has subsequently said?
No. He mentioned, first you must understand that he was a criminal and he supported himself, except when he worked for the restaurant here. He supported himself by crime, meaning the first thing he got was a gun. He'd been a hold-up artist and that sort of thing. So he supported himself with, so naturally he had criminal contacts. He ran heroin, made several trips bringing heroin into the United States from Canada. He had criminal contacts, and of course it was a great temptation for everybody to believe that those criminal contacts had something to do with the murder of Dr. King. But what finally what emerged as the truth was that those contacts were simply criminal contacts for making money, and nobody ever got paid for murdering Dr. King. So the reason for Ray's killing Dr. King would not have interested these other criminal contacts that he had.
Why is he saying recently, though, that he was hired, that there was a conspiracy?
He's not really saying that. Ray has had a succession of lawyers who can gain attention by saying something like that. Ray then may or may not say, yes, this is the way it was. It is simply that he's now had three sets of lawyers since Percy Forman left him. Each set of lawyers gets publicity by filing suit against me for violating Ray's civil rights and by claiming that they have new evidence of some conspiracy. It's because of the public's interest in conspiracy.
Now, when you made the deal with the lawyers, now, did you make the deal with Percy Forman or with Arthur Haynes?
No, I made the deal with Arthur Haynes, who was the first attorney. Mr. Forman didn't come in until
How much money did he get out
later.
Of it?
I paid Haynes $30,000.
And how much did Forman get out of it?
$10,000.
And how much did Ray get out of it?
Ray didn't get anything.
William Bradford Huey is our guest today on Insight, and we're talking about James Earl Ray, and we'll be back in a moment. Continuing on Insight with William Bradford Huey. Mr. Huey, since that assassination in April of 1968, there are a variety of people who feel that there was a conspiracy. In looking over the evidence, is there any doubt at all in your mind that James Earl Ray acted alone?
Well, there's not. Of course, there's no room for doubt because Ray made certain that he was identified as the assassin of Dr. King. The greatest tragedy that could have happened to Ray would have been to kill Dr. King and then not to have been identified as the assassin.
How did he get out of town so quickly?
Well, that was very easy, but remember, before he got out of town, the FBI knew it was Ray within an hour after the murder, although they didn't announce it for 3 weeks, because Ray made sure, as Ray told me, he took the rifle and he put his fingerprints all over it. He was very bitter, laughing, chuckling at the FBI when the FBI reported that the fingerprints were about three places on the rifle. Ray says, "Why, I put my fingerprints all over that rifle." But even more than fingerprints, he didn't wait for fingerprint evidence. After he shot Dr. King, as he ran down the stairs, he dropped the rifle, but alongside the rifle, for no reason whatsoever, he dropped a transistor radio. And that radio he had bought in the Missouri State Prison. And that radio had his prison number carved into it. And James Earl Ray knew it. So the FBI knew it was Ray within an hour after the murder.
Why did he want to be caught?
Well, you see, he killed Dr. King, and this is what people I'm sure are now understanding, or I hope they're understanding. He killed Dr. King to gain distinction. It has recently been said that we're not going to have peace in the world until every human being can be famous for 15 minutes. Ray killed Dr. King to get on television. He killed Dr. King to gain attention, the same reason these kooks point pistols at the President of the United States, the same reason Sirhan Sirhan killed Bob Kennedy.
You were one of the most vocal proponents of the lone assassin theory, not only as it relates to James Earl Ray, but Sirhan Sirhan and Lee Harvey Oswald. Is there no doubt at all in your mind? I mean, you are a very creative, open-minded individual. Is there no doubt in your mind at all that conceivably a conspiracy could exist in one of these assassinations? Everyone was the victim of a lone assassin.
Everyone, and let me bring up a powerful support for that. Robert Kennedy was the Attorney General of the United States, a very vindictive man, and several weeks after John Kennedy was killed, people tried to get me to write a book saying that Oswald didn't do it, or the FBI did it, or somebody, or there was a conspiracy. Robert Kennedy made this statement to me, and I hope all your listeners will try to remember it. It's a little long, but quote, Robert Kennedy says to me, "Huey, my brother John Kennedy is dead now and was killed simply because of the coincidence that he rode in an open car under a building in which there was a kook, one kook, who had the desire and the ability to kill him." Now that, I submit to your listeners and to you, sir, is the truth of all of them. This is every one of them is simply one lone psychopath yearning for attention. And this is a human yearning. 2,000 years ago, Aristotle said that life is a constant struggle to gain attention.
Well, how do you answer some of the evidence that's come out recently that would indicate that the CIA, or the FBI, I should say, suppressed some evidence as far as a letter written to the local FBI office, the alleged double of Lee Harvey Oswald in Mexico City, and a variety of other things that have come out specifically the John Kennedy case?
Well, all of those things simply support the idea that only Oswald was involved. Now, what those things indicate, how every bureaucracy tries to protect itself. The FBI made a mistake, and so they tried to suppress it. But that didn't mean that they were suppressing any evidence that there was a conspiracy. It meant that they knew in advance that Oswald was a kook, and they hadn't notified the Secret Service. That's all that means.
In James Earl Ray's case, do you feel he has had ample opportunity to tell his story in a court of law?
Oh, of course. Of course, in the first place, James Earl Ray is never going to tell his story in a court of law, and any lawyer who ever put Ray on the stand ought to be disbarred.
Why?
Well, if you know anything about criminal trials, you know that whenever you put a defendant on the stand, you open him up, first of all, to a cross-examination on his entire criminal career, and would completely discredit him at that point. And then anything else that he said would be meaningless, and the last thing Ray would do would tell the exact truth while he was there. He might, because he is very proud of the fact. This is the only thing that gives his life any distinction, is his murder of Dr. King. It has given him a certain standing among prisoners themselves. He has enjoyed all that you and I, the fact that you and I are talking about him now, is something that he takes great satisfaction of. So the day he's forgotten will be the bitterest day in his life.
William Bradford Huey has been our guest today on Insight. He is author of a book on the James Earl Ray case called He Slew the Dreamer, The True Story of James Earl Ray. And we thank you very much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Insight with Bruce Dumont is presented through the facilities of WNIS-FM. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of NBC News or WNIS.